Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, my name is Candace King. Welcome to a Super Bloom podcast. Today, we are going to talk about something that I love. It's art, it's creativity, it's writing, it's all these things in one with my guest, James III. If you don't know James III, he goes by James III. And I feel very strongly and passionate about making sure that I call him James III the entire time. I don't know if it's on mic when we're having this conversation or if we just get right into it, but just know. So you're going to hear me call him James III because I felt very passionate about using his entire name throughout our interview. And if you don't know James III, James III is a writer, producer, and actor. And we talk a lot about that today in this episode as well. And what we're celebrating is James III as a writer. Because while we are all on strike, James III has released his debut comic book. It is right now available. It is called Junior. It is available for pre-order or digital purchase. And for more details, you can go to ruleof3inc.com/comics. That's ruleof3inc.com/comics. Or check out his Instagram at ruleof3, and you can read more. And if you're like, Candace, oh, are you a comic book person? I didn't know that. You know, I've read a graphic novel or two in my day, and I have friends of mine that are very, very, very much into comics. And you know what? Yeah, I am into comics to the point where I go to comic cons all over the world. So I understand and see firsthand how big this genre of this community of people who appreciate not only comic books themselves, but also the franchises that they build and can form into, whether it be like television shows or films. And so we're going to talk about the heart of that today. I also want to let you know that we will be talking about suicide. That comes up in our conversation. So just give you a trigger warning so that you can be prepared. So just wanted to give you that trigger warning. Also, if you or someone else is struggling, I just want to remind you that 988 is the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Again, just dial the numbers 988. It is a Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. And I also want to share a little bit about an organization, A Light in Dark Places. It is one of the key sponsors of James III's comic book, Junior. Light in Dark Places breaks down stigma surrounding the topic of suicide by using the performative arts to encourage healthy discussion, create community, and offer hope to those affected. You can go to alightindarkplaces.org. Now, without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the wonderful James III. For Halloween, as someone who like loves the genre.
You know, we didn't do anything on the day proper. We went to Knights of the Jack, which we've been doing every year. It's a farm that has like a bunch of like pumpkins design, pumpkin jack-o'-lantern designs, and there's music and there's refreshments. And we went as a family and we dressed as, at the time we were allowed to dress as characters.
I know. Did you do it?
We did. Yeah, we did. It was.
It's okay. I won't tell. I did too.
Okay.
We're in it together. If we're outed, we're out together.
Yes. To be fair, we didn't know at the time. So we did it and we took the pictures and it was all done. And then like a couple days later, they're like, also don't do this. And we're like, okay, well.
I mean, we got bigger problems. We got bigger fish to fry, in my opinion. But every little bit counts. We're all in it together. But I'm so excited to speak with you today, James III. I am going to call you James III the whole time. Now I feel
the whole
like
time.
I have to. The whole time.
You can drop it. It can be just James. That's fine.
I'm assuming this is probably a dumb question, but you are the third.
I am the third. Yes, I am. I am the third in a guess as long line of Jameses as three is. That's
Do you have kids then?
I do. I have a baby girl.
Okay, so did you go with James?
She is James IV, even though that is not her name. That's not her name, is Madeline. But once she's old enough for it to not be confusing for me to refer to her as James IV, I will start referring to her as that.
Love it. Did you like being a the third when you were a kid?
It was weird, I think. I went back and forth from like feeling like, oh, this is kind of fun and cool, and to also sort of feeling like I had a name and a number associated with it, it felt sort of like almost a non-name in a way, like, oh, you're three, you know, like you're model number 520, you know, like it sort of felt like that sometimes.
Do you have a lot in common with your father and your grandfather?
I grew up without my father, and I only knew my grandfather for a couple of years. In terms of what I do know about them, I share an affinity for sci-fi with my dad.
When did you find that out?
Early on. So I actually have a, I guess, it, I don't know how funny this story is, but my mom, as a kid, my mom was like, oh, you know, your dad was a Trekkie. And like, I think that was formidable for me. Like, I ended up watching all of the, okay, I don't know if I can talk about this, but watching that stuff.
The series in which has been around at many Comic-Cons since the dawn of Comic-Con day.
Dawn of Comic-Con, yes.
With pointed ears and a different language.
And there's the different shirts that everyone wears, and the shirts are designated for what role you have. And I think that it shaped a lot of like what I watched as a kid. And then cut to doing this comic that kind of explores my feelings about this. There's a panel that references that show. And I was looking at it and I like wanted to talk to my mom about it before it came out. And I was like, oh, mommy, remember you said dad was a Trekkie? And she goes, was he? What was he one?
So it's like, you're like, my whole identity, connective tissue,
to this thing that I've always just been like, yep, and this is in his footsteps, and I am following that the lineage of this, and perhaps it wasn't true at all. So who knows, you know.
Isn't that the funniest thing about parenting? That like, there's so many times where I'm driving and my mom or my daughter will be like, mom, who's God? And I'm like, fuck, like, what? And I just like this thing, but this person, but this thing, you know, and like, I kind of like try to give some answer. And then I can't even imagine some of the things that like 20 years from now, she'll be like, yeah. And that really deep, insightful conversation. It was just me trying to find a parking spot at the Trader Joe's, you know, coming up with an answer.
You have formulated an idea of the great beyond to her. And, but meanwhile, it's like this, whatever off the top of your head.
Yeah. Whatever's off the top of the head sometimes, you know, and then the things that I sit down and I really take the time to like research and like speak to her about that's just gone. Yeah. They see right through that. They're like, no, thank you. What's funny is, like, I think it's really easy to see through comics and like genre and just take them at like face value as just like this like subculture that people either get or they don't get. And that it's, I think finally right now we are seeing it become more of like a universe, like people understand Absolutely. Because of a lot of these bigger superhero franchises, like how universal the central plot lines are of all of these things that used to be kind of thought as like a subculture, you know, kind of group only. Were you always reading comic books as a kid, like beyond even just watching the pointy-eared alien franchise name?
Right. I was very big on the TV shows and the movies and read some comics. I have an early memory of my mom giving me some Batman comics for Christmas. And for some reason, this particular comic cover was like almost horror inspired. It was dark. Batman has like my memory of it is like Batman nailing a coffin closed. And I remember saying to her, oh, this is like a dark Batman. And she looked at it and she took the comics away and never got me another comic. No. Again. No. And so I think that has to do with why a lot of my experience is related to the TV shows and the movies. I didn't start reading comics heavy until adulthood. And like I had a job and I had to not necessarily disposable income that probably should have gone to something else, but has now sort of led to my comics collection. But it's funny that you say that about the universality of comics, because that makes me think of Sir Ian McKellen talking about the role that he played and how he and Patrick Stewart as well talked about these as if it was like Shakespeare. Like, these are the Shakespearean characters. And everyone always talks about the universe. I don't know how much of a subculture to the masses Shakespeare feels, but there you always talk about the universality of Shakespeare and how, you know, we've been talking about this for hundreds of years and it has that staying power. And it was like, if they can see it this way, why can't more people? And I think fortunately through their work and stuff like that, it has become more and more universal to people.
Yeah. I mean, I remember even going to my first Comic-Con and it was well established, you know, well over a decade ago. It was not brand new. It was something that a lot of people went to. A lot of events happened in San Diego. But even just seeing how much it's exploded now and all of it, and that everything has a convention now. Mm-hmm. And I having worked in a genre show, I do a lot of conventions and have the opportunity to meet a lot of people. And it's like people get to come together and like celebrate all these little mini universes, like all over again. And they're adults. These are not like little kids. These are adults that find like such that kind of brings out this, not that, but brings out this, that it's just for pure joy. You know, no one's going there to like have this like evolved higher. It's not like a better yourself kind of workshop thing. You're going because you love it. It touched you. It taught you something about the world. It taught you something about yourself. And you get to get together with other people and experience that. And so it's been really, you know, as someone who does not get into genres and does not get into like any sort of like comic book worlds or, you know, superhero franchise universes, it's very interesting to be on the receiving side of that and just see like what a cool time to like be an adult where it's like celebrated to play.
Yeah. It's all what I also love about them is seeing sort of where the different subcultures cross over, like where you find someone, oh, this person is very heavy into anime or something that I don't know anything about, but they also love the, you know, this we're both in line to meet you know, the
I know we can't, but Walter it's kind of like Jones charades. I know.
Yeah, right.
Three words sounds like ear.
But that it's, you know, you never know. Everyone, we're all from different walks of life. You know, growing up, it was like, this type of person likes this. They're a nerd and they wear a this and they look like a that. And this is who is into that stuff, you know. And that, I don't know why that was the prevailing idea. But when you go to these conventions, it's adults, it's kids, it's people of all ages, all walks of life. And they're all coming together because they do love this thing. And I love that about it.
You always think like the movies that I grew up with, it was like everyone was just an incredibly stereotypical version of a character in it. And my experience at being at any of these conventions is like everyone's there. All the characters are there. There is no just like one there, like to what you're saying. There's no like just nerds table and then that's it.
Yeah.
Like everyone, the cheerleaders are there. The football players are there. The mathletes are there. Debate club's there. Everyone's there. So Junior, your comic book is very, very personal. And I would assume, you know, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but before getting into just the storyline of that, I want to know a little bit more about you and your childhood, because immediately opening up, you know, page one, I was like, oh, this is it. I haven't read a lot of graphic novels, but the ones that I've read have been deeply, deeply personal and pleasantly surprised me, because it is just a genre that I never really knew much about. And so for you, I was just so excited to kind of like know like what made you at this point want to kind of create something that was just so personal to you in this fictionalized world that so many people can also find comfort in, because you share a lot about it. I mean, it's death as well. Like it's this fictionalized like afterlife that is such a fun and wonderful world that everyone I think contemplates what it must be like.
Junior for me, this comic, it's about a father-son working together in the afterlife. And where this comes from for me as a kid growing up, I lost my dad very young, but growing up, it meant nothing. I didn't know him. So it was just like, I have my mom and this is great. But every now and again, when people would be like, you know, oh, how's your dad or your parents or whatever, you know, I'd be like, oh, my mom. And then would say what happened and everyone would respond, you know, oh, I'm so sorry, which of course, thank you. I appreciate it. But it was like, I don't need that. I didn't feel a loss growing up. And I was, you know, and like I said, I was super into, you know, sci-fi and Tim Burton. I think the comic is very heavily Tim Burton inspired. Like I just love a kind of like a quirky world. I love a weird tree. I love stuff like that, you know. And so then cut to adulthood, and I'm kind of exploring being an artist and trying a bunch of different things, theater, thinking about stand-up and stuff like that. And I turned 25, which is the age my dad was when he passed. And I suddenly realized I didn't have a dad growing up. And this is when he went away. And so it was like this weird moment where now I feel a loss, and I'm like also trying to explore art, and you know, and he took his life when he was 25, and there isn't a lot of art and works about suicide and that area of mental health. And so I wanted to explore that and what that meant for me. And so it was, you know, the early stuff kind of started heavy. It started like, it was the very like traditional, they did a solo show. It was the very like, I lost my dad and I'm sad. And also here's a poem. You know, it was like, it kind of was that vibe of performance. And because it was so heavy, that led to me doing comedy. I started doing stand up and trying to figure out how can I infuse, you know, some humor into this story that, you know, while it's heavy and it deals with a lot of heavy themes, you know, for my direct connection to it is still one of like, I think a trauma that I've been suppressing, you know? So like, I have a kind of distance from the feeling of it, you know, and I'm kind of experiencing all of these emotions right now, you know, and working through it in a raw way. And then cut to that. This was 10 years ago now. And then, you know, as I kept working as a writer and a comedian, people kept asking me like, what's your Atlanta? You know, we want to see, you know, what's the dark, gritty thing that you have going on? And I kind of thought that Junior, which is what the stage show was called, sort of only really existed as that. And I didn't want to do more beyond that, but I figured I might as well try it, because literally every single person I'm talking to is asking me, how do I do what Donald Glover did? how can I repeat this brilliant thing that Donald Glover has done myself? And I, you know, tried and tried, and it just was not clicking. And then I thought about like, the reason it's not clicking is because that's not me. That's not my lane. You
that's
love
his
a weird
lane.
Tree.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
his lane. You love his a lane. Weird tree. Yep. You love Michael Keaton saying it's showtime. That's what you love. You love that stuff. And so that's where this comic comes from, is me trying to sort of live in a weird, quirky afterlife, and also exploring my feelings about this loss that I had I don't know if I've ever quite grappled with in a deep way.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
One of the things that we're on strike about is AI and the idea of like essentially a computer system, a robot, if you will, creatively performing, and or even, you know, that's what the writers were striking about as well, was making sure that robots and AI was not writing scripts, because even though that they're learning from all of these kind of like pre-existing scripts and material and art that exists out there, like that's everything that you just described, that cannot be taught. Like that's not a computer. That is personal human experience. And you can try to shove that down the throat of and turn it into a Donald Glover type thing, but there's just something missing. Doesn't click. And that feeling that you just had that said, why doesn't it click? Because that's not my lane. I need the weird trees. I need, you know, the guy in the striped black and white suit with the crazy hair saying it's showtime. Like I need that. And like that is what I think is so incredible about art and so necessary, is that we can all look at the same, you know, we can all look at the same thing and have a different perspective based off of like the path that we have walked in life. And so for you to be able to bring that to a stage and share with other people, I mean, one, I think that, you know, suicide is something that is way more common than sadly we like to believe. And it has affected so many. So I can't even imagine the people who came to speak with you, you know, after your performances. Did you have people come and connect with you and just say thank you? Or I saw, like, I have a personal experience of a loved one and you've just made me see it in a different way.
Yeah, I definitely had that. When I got to do the show back home, and the most, so I was in New York at the time when I was working on it, and I got to do it back home. And
where was home?
Akron, Ohio. And so I did at the Akron Civic Theater, and there were outreach groups that came, that were sort of dealing with mental health. And that was amazing to get to perform in front of them and, you know, do the talk back and talk about, you know, sort of it, the different experiences from their perspective and also from my perspective. But then what was really opening in a way that I didn't even imagine was, I had family come, and family from my dad's side, who I'm not, it's a weird, I don't know how to quite quantify my relationship with my family, my immediate family, and also my the dad's side of my family. But we don't talk about it. You know, it's a thing that we just don't talk about, you know, it happened and it's sad. And we, you know, on Memorial Day, we go to the cemetery and that's, but we don't talk about it. And afterwards I, you know, had my sisters, you know, oh, I didn't know you felt that way. My cousins, I didn't know that I've been going through, you know, and us kind of breaking that open and being able to talk about it in a way that we hadn't before. That was really a game changer for me, or eye opener for me.
How old were you when you learned that your father took his life?
So we, you know, we always knew. I have a memory of being 12, 13 when my mom was like talking to me and casually said how it happened. So I didn't know at that time the way that the means, and she, I think it was more, again, I'm I'm so distant from my emotions about this, but she, I think, was like swept with emotion when she realized that I hadn't heard it before, and she was like, oh my God, sit down, let's talk about, you know, and I was, again, fine and like distant in my like weird detachment from it, but I remember it being, you know, a thing that was just kind of, I think maybe it was important that we knew that that was what it was and not just like that he had died or whatever. I think it was important to the adults that the kids knew how it happened. So as far as I can, as early as I can remember, I knew that that was the what happened.
And did you anticipate turning 25 and having this?
Truly,
like, that I hear that a lot for people who have lost parents and their parents were younger. But when you're young, you're obviously younger than your parents. So you always think, mm-hmm. Oh, no, they were older. They were an adult. They were a grown up. They were at a completely different chapter in life. And then when you find yourself, I mean, I think that's what we've all kind of figured out is you still feel the same age. Like you get older, but you're like, I'm so young, mm-hmm. You know, and you get older and you're like, no, but I'm still young. And 25 is very young.
Yeah.
And so to hit that stage and go like they're. Like to really recognize and I'm sure also being the same age, finally feeling like I am also at a point of manhood to understand mm-hmm. this person. Like this is not someone now that, and now you're going to be older than them and know mm-hmm. more than them.
Yeah.
Which I would imagine is it comes with its emotional, a lot of like questions to mm-hmm. to whomever you believe or the universe or yourself or.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't anticipate it at all. I was blindsided by turning older than him, you know, even though it's a thing where it's just like, well, naturally, you know, that's how things work. You either, if you are fortunate enough to mm-hmm. continue going, you do,
that's
you know,
the goal. Yeah.
And so I was blindsided by it. And yes, and absolutely felt like. And I talk about this in the comic a little bit, but felt like he was a kid. It felt like he was, I felt like a child and still feel like a child at 37, still feel like a child now, you know? And so I have been, it is racking my brain. Like I can't imagine feeling that much. Whatever the emotions were, you know, and whatever the state of the world was for him that led to that action, you know, I couldn't imagine feeling that weight. And yes, to your point, it is more common, you know, and it is an occurrence that happens and affects a lot of people more often. Be it ideation or the act, you know, or an attempt, you know, it does affect a lot more people. And I, you know, there's a lot of great programs out there that are helping to further the conversation. And there's also a lot of great art out there that's trying to explore it. And I generally wish there was more. I wish it wasn't as taboo as it is. Even in saying that out loud, it's like, I understand why it's taboo because we don't want anyone, to do it, you know? And so, and because of that, it's like, you know, don't speak of it at all. You know, we must never speak of this, you know? And so it's such a hard, tough, complicated situation.
Yeah. And yet you created art that not only approached the situation, the topic, but also, you know, I think another topic of conversation that people have a really tough time talking about, which is death and like where mm-hmm. we go in the afterlife and what that looks like. And if what our time on this planet means, and, you know, and I know religion is obviously a whole other, you know, conversation, but like really wanting to understand like, well, what happens? What is all of this for? And so, and not only did you put it down in words, but you brought it to life in kind of this world. Like, is that something that you've thought a lot about in adulthood? It's funny. I grew up going to church. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with going to church, and I have no problem going to different kinds of churches. Like, I, you know, obviously I want to go to a church that like loves and respects people and thinks that we all have like equal rights as human beings and human rights. Like, mm-hmm. that's important to me. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I just haven't really gone in adulthood. And it's funny, like having a child, and I live in Nashville, Tennessee, and it's there's a lot of religion here, and it gets talked about a lot, to the point where my 7-year-old asks me a lot of questions, because yeah. she gets it brought up to her from other friends on the playground or on Sundays, you know, after school. And so she's asking me about like, well, what's God and what's baptism and what's hell? And I'm just like, mommy's just trying to find a parking spot. Like, it's very busy.
But like, why are you only asking me these questions while I'm trying to park?
I know. Every time when we're running late. But I, you know, and it's interesting, like the older that I get anxious to think about like what happens yeah. next. And I start like worrying about like, where do we go when we know that bad things happen in the world, and that like, how do we make sense of it? So for mm-hmm. you, had you thought about afterlife a lot before creating this world? And it's a really fun after, like a dark, fun afterlife world.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I grew up religious. I'm not religious anymore, but grew up Baptist Christian. Can I say that? We can bleep it. If we,
I think we can say that.
But let's bleep it. Let's bleep that idea. No, I grew up in that world and was very moved and very connected to it. And but have also, I think, always thought about, or for as long as I can remember, thought about like different kind of avenues and what does the afterlife look like, and what are the you know, what are the corridors? What are the different areas? What are the shapes? And I've always found that interesting. And all of the different representations that I've seen, like from the like, you know, when it's represented as like a specifically 1950s office building, or, you know, like all of the different ways we've seen it represented on TV and in books, a DMV, yeah, all of these types of things. It's always fun to, I think I enjoy more so than thinking about like, what are the realities of the, you know, religions and different and all of the different talk and about what the afterlife could tangibly be. You know, I have more fun thinking about like the playing in that space and having fun with the ideas of what it is. And I think, you know, depending on your entry point, what I enjoy about it is just like, you know, we're all going to do it. There's an expiration date for us all, and we will all be there. It's much more fun to think about it as, you know, as a place with where there are jobs, where there are homes, where there are creatures beyond our imagination, than to think about it as either total darkness or whatever it would mean to just stop. Yeah. And something that I'm, you know, that I'm thinking about for the future of Junior, because there's an issue one out now and issue two is in process, is to also explore different cultures and what death means in different cultures and how different it, just because, you know, I feel as though I am certainly writing from my Western understanding of, you know, what death is and what death means, you know, but that is not everyone's purview and not everyone's connection to it. And maybe there's reincarnation, maybe there are ghosts, maybe there are, you know, and I don't know if it's dark to enjoy living in that and thinking about that, but it is something that is exciting and always interesting to me.
I know part of me is like, in a childlike way, has been like, well, What if whatever you believe, that's just what is?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what if, what if that's just how it works? What if, like, that's the last laugh is like, well, that's what you thought, so that's what you get. Like, you know, and there's not just like one rule for everyone.
I used to think that, like, I used to just firmly think that that is what it is. And I thought that there was no way that this many different people can be sure about what the afterlife is, if not for that to just be true, you know. And so, like, if you are of this religion or of this mindset and you die, that is what's going to happen to you. And then I'm going to get the things that I, you know,
is this just so obvious for part of, like, that. The participation trophy generation? It's just like...
We get whatever you want, you get. But, you know, and wouldn't that be great? There's a show that I keep thinking of that I know that I can't directly reference, but that came out a couple years back. It has my favorite exchange in it, and I'll just say the exchange, which is someone dies and they ask, "Who got it right?" And then the person on the other side responds with, funnily enough, and then explains the story of one person. There was one guy on earth who was high one day and explained what death was like. And then we then proceed to watch this show that takes place in a place very similar to what that guy described. And I just think that idea is also very funny too, because somebody got to be right. You know,
someone,
we all talk about all these.
Somebody.
Maybe whoever's saying that it stops and there's nothing, maybe they're the one that's right. But there's somebody got to be right. Someone out there.
Do you feel? I mean, the heart of the story is obviously a father and son. Do you feel that by writing this comic series, that it is also kind of allowing you to have a conversation with a father you didn't have?
Yeah, I thank you for asking that particular question. The conversation with him, because I've never talked about this, that's why I appreciate the question. But I think that the conversation with him is something that I have been trying to attain in a variety of different ways. In the stage show, there were two of them. One was, you know, a time I remember bearing my soul to his gravestone. Just, I went one day, I was in town, I went and I had a tear session and a scream session and a, you know.
You got all your teenage years out in one sitting.
Got everything out, yeah, exactly. You need to know that I did this, this, and this. And also, and I'm mad at you for this, but. And then I also imagined in the stage show, my earliest memory is a really bad asthma attack. I had it around 17, 18 months. And I remember it because I guess it was so traumatic. And I also envisioned that at that time in the stage show, I did do like a poem about, in that moment, I was actually transported to meet him at that age, and we in our baby language spoke to each other, kind of thing. And I think, you know, I just think that is something that I'm interested in. What would I say? What would it be? I got a lot. This junior started as a pilot script as well, and I got a lot of notes of just like, but where's the show gonna go? And I'm like, I just wanted them to talk. That's all I wanted them to do is talk. But where, if they do all this now, then what's the show? I don't care what the show is. Remember when they said this to each other? You know, like that I think was just meaningful. It was meaningful to me for them to just for their first interaction to be dad. Oh no, it's oh shit, I think is what dad, oh shit, is their first, you know, like, I know that you are this person. Are you gonna, you know, will you accept it? Are you gonna talk, you know, and then what would that look like? And so yeah, it does sort of both feel like, yes, I'm doing that, and then also at the same time, he can't control what he says. So I have complete control over what his reactions are and what kind of how he's represented and you know, sometimes in all of these different iterations of him that I have imagined, my mom used to try to tell me what he was really like, and I'd be like, well, I don't, but that's not what it is, this is what she'd be like, well, you know, he did want to do that, and I'm like, well, I don't care about that, this is what I'm feeling, you know.
Hold up, what was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsinis.
I'm Kayla Tsinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
And I love that you keep saying it because it's personal to me. Like, this part is personal to me. And again, I just think that that is like, that's the root, that we cannot lose that. Like, that is the life source of art and humanity and what connects all of us together. And we truly have been so close to losing that with, you know, these things, these phones. And I mean, I'm so glad that we're able to speak on these computers. It makes us be able to be anywhere in the world and connect. But also there is something about just like making it personal to you. And then like, it's not meant to be personal for everybody. That's not what's going to happen. But the people that need it, like the people that need that to feel less alone, like they're going to hear that. They're going to get that kind of like reverberation like back to them. If if you're the willingness to be able to create it in the first place. And that's the fucking stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, I have that feeling of, to your point about, isn't it great that we can talk to each other on this computer right now in this way? It is so great. And I'm just like, can we find the cap? Like, where can we, I want technology to stop at a certain, whenever it's no longer good for, for me, that's where I want it to.
Yes. We don't need cars to drive themselves.
We don't.
When I got my car that was like, look, you push this button and it's going to parallel park. And I was like, please don't do that, sir. I would not feel comfortable with you doing that. And I'm going to throw myself out of this parallel parking car. And I'm going to blame it on you.
But then it's like, all of those things, there is a practical application for all of these things. And it makes me upset. It makes me upset when I... Because I've been talking myself in circles about what is AI writing? And I agree. I feel like the difference is the personal experience of the human that then is responsible for the way these things. Because I keep going, well, the way we are taught is we do consume a bunch of stuff, and then through that consumption, we then have our, we then have the way that we present those things, which is, the AI is aggregating all of these things and then spitting it out in the way that it spits it out. But because it doesn't have the lived experience, it's not going to do it in the way that a human is doing. And that becomes the step that I feel like is hard to, especially if you have the money to produce things. You're like, well, I don't care about that. I want to push a button and have a movie in 10 seconds. Like, that's what I want. That's what I want to do. You know how many movies I can make if I can press a button and have movies in 10 seconds? You know how much money that's going to get me, But to your point, it's like, because of the personal experience, I think that also makes the not only the art itself stronger, but I think that makes the experience of viewing the art strong. You know, it actually makes art, you know, what I feel like art is for and what entertainment is for is to connect people. And through it's a way of, you know, exploring what's going on for a people, right? And but if we take the people out of that, then it is no longer that. It is something else. It is, you know, I don't know what it is, but it's not doing that. It's taking out what makes art personal or what makes art, you know, something that unites people. I think it's removing that element.
And has been around forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
But the storytelling, as an art, has been around forever. And I can't believe we think at this point, we're already burning the world to the ground. I'm like, can we just leave that alone? Please, yeah. Leave us something. What is it for anyone that doesn't read graphic novels or comic books and that knows someone that does, or maybe like walks by them in the store, has a kid that's like, oh, I want this, but like doesn't like get it. Like what is something that gets you, like that you understand, that like caught your attention about that whole genre?
So this is unique to me. And I think I've already talked about Batman comics before. What got me back into comics as hardcore as I now am, my collection is too big now, is I read Batman's Wedding at the same time that Batman got married at the same time that I got married. And it was like, again, something I felt connected to Batman on a level that I did. There's a lot that I remember about it. But one of the things that sticks out to me most, that's like probably, I don't know if Tom King is the writer of it. I don't know if he thinks that this was like, I crushed it with this. But there is a scene when Catwoman is talking about the guest list. And she's just like, who are we going to invite? And everyone in the world happens to be frozen at this time. And so she's just referring to like frozen poison ivy. Maybe we should invite frozen poison. And I was floored by that. Just felt connected to this character who is such a big part of my life because he's everywhere. You know, we're gonna see a million of them. That was something that connected me to that specifically. I think that if we're just talking about the art form at large, I think to that same end, it just, things can be expressed in a way that, to me, it's that bridge between like, you know, you're reading a novel and you're imagining what you're going to see. You're watching a movie and you're seeing someone's interpretation of something. And then what graphic novels do is it's that bridge between. It's like you are still filling in some of those blanks. So it feels like collaborative in the reading process of like, you know, you are piecing together how the story moves a little bit, you know, because of just the way that the artists and the writers are able to represent the part of the story that they want to tell. But the transition from this panel to that panel, oh, that's where you're cooking. That's where you, the reader, is sort of filling in some stuff, you know. And then the other thing I'll just say is these writers and artists out there are doing some of the most just, you know, there's thousands upon thousands of comics and graphic novels that are made every year. And all of the art is like just these museum worthy pieces, you know, that are squeezed into 6.5 by 10.5 or whatever the actual dimensions are, pages, but the just explosive and like gripping and dynamic art that I think, you know, if you are appreciative of any sort of visual, you know, if you've ever been pleased by seeing a picture or a moving image or anything, I think that like it's certainly worth picking up a comic. And if you need like what I needed to get as hooked as I did was like, you know, something that I saw that was already adapted or what have you, that stuff is also out there too. You know, you can find, if you're like, well, I don't know what to pick up, and you're like, oh, I liked the last blank movie, or I liked the last whatever, or, oh, I didn't know that was adapted from a, there's a lot of things like that too. I think pick those up and read those, you know, and see if there are more issues, see if that is what pulls you in.
And kids, I know it's, kids and adults love it. I love one of my girlfriends here in Nashville. She has a very large mm-hmm. collection of comic books and comic figurines. And like, that's her biggest concern. She's about to move and she's like, how am I going to get all my figurines? Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not going to touch them, but I don't know.
It's really...
I will cheer you on from afar, from your new couch, drinking a cocktail while you figure that out. But she always brings my 7-year-old comic books and it just makes mm-hmm. me so happy because it's just like, it is like the art within them. And especially now when everything just moves so quickly and like, mm-hmm. and not in like a tangible, like holding a book form. Like it's lovely that it is a genre that is still like appreciated, but also appreciated even more now because mm-hmm. the people who do it really love it. And that's obvious by the way that you speak on it as well. Well, James III, I could talk to you all day long. Before I let you go, we're gonna have a little conversation cool down, as I like to call it. So if you could just tell me like the first couple things that like first word or sentence that pops into your head, can you tell us something that you like?
Pizza.
What kind of pizza?
I love a good pepperoni, sausage, maybe a little bacon.
So solid meat lovers guy.
Yeah. I can't do you can't go hardcore. You can't then also add ham. And then like a different type of mm-hmm. of sausage. I back away from that. You know, I don't need it to be loaded, but like it's like a delicate kind of those
Father,
those
Son,
guys.
And the Holy Ghost of the meats of pizzas. Yes,
yes. Exactly. I didn't realize that was what it was. Yeah. But that is
yes,
what it
yes.
is.
Yes, that's the proper pizza terminology. What is something that you know?
Oh, wow. I know that I spent a lot of time as a kid trying to be someone, and I am now spending time trying to be the person I wanted to be as a kid. You know, I spent a lot of time trying to emulate, I guess, what the outside world or what I thought the outside world wanted from me. And I think that, and I don't know if that is true of all people, but I certainly believe it to be true of a lot of people in my circles as well, like kind of embracing a person that maybe they weren't allowed to be or didn't feel like they were allowed to be. And so that's something that I know. I know that I am definitely doing that right now.
What's something that you hate?
I hate being tickled. I hate being tickled.
That. Yeah.
Just sort of you see the most out of your control, I think, you'll ever be is when you are being tickled. And there are faculties about you that you can't always hold, you know, you might find yourself slobbering in addition to laughter. You know, you might not be able to hold, you might find yourself peeing your pants. All of these things can happen when you're being tickled. Your body might start moving in so I hate that. Certainly hate that.
I too am not into adult time tickling, no, at all. What is something that you love that is not your family, friends, great, just something that you personally love?
I love space. I love outer space. I love thinking about what the heck is out there and does that ever stop? And, you know, where we are so far away from things, everything that is out there. So like, what is out there? You know, what are the, is there more life? Is there, you know, the physics of things, like what's inside of a black hole? I'd love to go. I would love to just go inside a black hole if it didn't mean that my insides were going to be turned inside out. So space.
If Miss Frizzle could hook that up and be like, get in the magic school bus.
Miss Frizzle, are you listening to this? Because I need to go. I can hop on the bus. I can drive. You need me to drive. You need a bus driver. If you can get me to space, I would appreciate that.
And last but not least, what is a quirky little fact about you?
Quirky little fact about me. Quirky little fact. And you said the first thing, but I don't know what is coming to mind. I don't, maybe what's the holdup is me not finding myself interesting. It's why I'm struggling to say something quirky about myself.
Do you have a party trick? Do you have like a party trick that you do? I get asked these questions all the time. Like when I do go to the Comic Cons and things like that, I get asked a lot of questions like, if you could listen to one song for the rest of your life on a desert island.
Rest of my life?
The rest of your life, one song. And I take this way too seriously. And I'm just sitting up there like sweating like, I don't know. Like, do I want an up tempo, slow tempo? Like, what's not going to drive me crazy?
Right.
And then you're suddenly just being like, shares believe. I don't know why I said that. I take it back. Yes, maybe.
I thought all the things you said by Tattoo is what I thought in the with, at the moment of you saying. And I don't know how
and
true
you know
that
what?
Is.
I think
but
that's
that
your quirky fact.
And there it is.
There it is.
And there it is.
There it is, everyone. James III, thank you so much. What
thank
a joy.
You.
And
it.
Congratulations. A Super Bloom podcast is hosted by me, Candace King, produced by Melissa DeMonts and Diamond Imprint Productions, edited by Diane Kang, post-production sound by Coco Lawrence, and advertising partnership with Acast.